Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with the Professor, and of course the subject this week is going to be the Philadelphia Eagles. What an amazing turnaround. A team that last year was struggled in the close games, didn't have a winning season, but now best team in football. And joining us right now to talk about that is Donovan McNabb. Nobody better to talk to than the guy that helped that last go around that built this team into a Super Bowl team and an annual playoff team. Donovan, what's been the biggest surprise from what you've seen from the Eagles this year?
I think it's more or less of just the maturation process of Carson Wentz, the experience of Doug Peterson being at the head coaching position, the defense finally getting a few pieces in order to shore up being a force in the pass game and the run game. And then, you know, special teams, you know, to top things off. I think when you look at the Philadelphia Eagles last year, they showed great signs of just progress in the beginning of the year and then hit a wall toward the middle and the end. And I think once Lane Johnson got back after suspension, they started to gel a little bit toward the end of the year. And now that's what you're seeing, a team that continues to play with confidence. They're running the football well. Carson Wentz is protecting the football. And defensively, they're shoring up and getting off on third down. You know, so I think for this Philadelphia football team, if they can continue to stay healthy and continue to play with confidence, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, I know that. I mean, what's the one thing that I think has been so pleasant to watch is that, how do you compare it to the rise that you had with Andy Reid in getting that program going back when you got into the league?
Well, you know, the thing with Andy was he wanted to take things slow. You know, once Doug was here to mentor me a little bit and then just prepare me and show me how to be a professional, and then the reins were kind of thrown off where he, you know, had the confidence of putting me in. You know, we just kind of took one step at a time. And as my first year ended, I think the offseason was so important for us to spend more time together and for me to get comfortable in this offense. They put some more guys on the offensive end, bringing in John Ryan to kind of shore up the offensive line with Trey Thomas. Our offensive line started to gel a little bit. And I think from my second year, the confidence of our football team, knowing what Andy expected, how we were going to prepare and what to expect getting out on the football field, we started to play at a higher level than people kind of expected from us. And from that point on, we just gained more and more confidence each and every year that no matter who we were going to play, it wasn't a matter of if we were going to win, it was about how much we were going to win by.
Yeah, no question. How do you compare your development to Carson Wentz?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's times have changed. You know, you see some of these quarterbacks and the way that they learn different things in college, you know, it's different than when I came out. You know, we ran the football a little bit more while we were in college. It wasn't so much of a passing offense. These guys have these quarterback coaches and gurus that they work with in high school, in college. You know, so for me, I didn't go through all that. So I guess I was behind the eight ball a little bit. So Carson's a little bit more advanced than I was coming into my first couple of years, but at least my second year starting. It's funny, I was just looking up numbers. You know, I was second in MVP voting with 3,300 yards passing, almost 700 yards rushing, 21 touchdowns. And, you know, we kind of shocked, I think, the world by the way that we played all throughout the year and found ourselves in the playoffs. And, you know, from that point on, we just kind of took off. And to watch Carson play the way he's playing now, not a lot of people expect the Philadelphia Eagles to at least be where they are right now in the division, where they are right now ranked as far as the league is concerned, and then more importantly, how he's handling the blitz. He is, I mean, efficient in versus the blitz. He's getting the ball out of his hands. Third down, he's one of the best in the game. You know, QB efficiency and rating is up there. So when you have a quarterback that's playing the way he's playing, you have a great chance of winning.
Yeah, it's funny because, I mean, when you came out of Syracuse, I mean, you had to make the adjustment to the West Coast offense because yours was, I guess, more of a running type of offense. And here's Carson Wentz. You know, the criticism is too many spread quarterbacks and all that. But he came out of a pro set offense. It was a small school, and so he really never had to play against NFL caliber type players for the most part. But, boy, the fact that, you know, he came in kind of knowing that system helped. You came in and learned that. You learned it in a year and did well. So it's kind of interesting to see, you know, the comparisons between what you went through and what he's going through.
Well, you know, I think, like I said, the game has kind of developed more into it's like sideline to sideline now. So much of this jet sweep and read option, and, you know, you got running backs who come into the league, all of a sudden they become slot receivers. Receivers become utility guys. And quarterbacks are kind of behind the eight ball a little bit because they don't really know how to read defense. And I think when you look at just the maturation process, just right now, in the first 2 years of the three quarterbacks that we can talk about, their second year, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, and also Dak Prescott, I mean, they all hit the kind of hit the ground running. I think the process was a little bit different for Jared Goff because, you know, the way that it was handled in L.A. was just kind of weird. You know, you don't dress him for the first game. You know, you kind of leak out there that he just can't pick up the offense. And he came from a spread offense in California where, you know, he's throwing the ball downfield. He's a shotgun a lot, not under center. And I thought that he was kind of put in a bad situation with Jeff Fisher because there wasn't an offensive-minded staff. You know, the guys that he had helping him on the offense really had no experience and no game playing, you know, experience. So I look at what Dak Prescott, you know, with Jason Garrett playing in the NFL, having games played, and then also Carson Wentz with his staff, his quarterback coaches, and his offensive coordinator with quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, that right there has prepared them to kind of gel and flourish in the offense. Now you're starting to see Jared Goff, you know, start to evolve in an offense where he has an offensive coordinator who's strictly an offensive-minded guy and can build the offense around him. And then you start to see everything develop for him. So I love what I'm seeing so far from this young class of quarterbacks. And then, you know, the next crop that's coming in the next couple of years will be going through the same process.
Well, you bring up a great point because I think that may be one of the themes that Barbie owners need to look at, because when you look at the staff that Doug Peterson's put together on offense, it's exceptional on offense. And you look at what Sean McVay has been able to do. For example, I mean, you know, he's a great play caller himself, and he needed a coordinator, and he needed an offensive a quarterback coach, and Greg Olsen was going to go for the Buffalo job as a coordinator. He came there as a quarterback coach. And so you have Tom Reich there as a quarterback coach in over in Philadelphia. It's like, you know, you surround great coaching with a good young quarterback, good things happen.
Well, and again, it's the trust value. I mean, for a lot of these guys, you know, and take us back to last year. I mean, people were calling Jared Goff a bust. And the first thing that I talked about, you know, on my radio show, was more or less everybody needs to just relax and pump their brakes. He's just a rookie. He's learning the game. But secondly, they're not helping him by any means over there with the offense that they're running. You know, here's a guy coming from a spread offense out of the shotgun. What you do is when you draft a guy, especially as your first pick, you want to build that offense to something he's comfortable with, something he ran at Cal. You know, and then you kind of develop him into a pocket passer where now he's becoming a professional, and then you can evolve the offense. It seems like they just threw an offense in front of them that they felt was successful by probably an experienced quarterback, not a young guy. And he, you know, he looked kind of like he was two steps behind. You know, Todd Gurley paid the price. He didn't run the football well. Their offensive line wasn't that good. Their wide receivers and skill position players weren't that great. And then defensively, they were out on the football field for about 75 to 80 plays a game, which as a football team, now you're dividing the football team because defense is looking at offense. Like, hey, you know, you guys need to pick it up. We're out here dying. So when McVay came in, McVay already, I had the opportunity to work with McVay in Washington. He's a smart guy, and he understands how to build an offense being under Kyle Shanahan and Mike Shanahan and also being under Jake Gruden and knowing what to do and how to dissect different defenses. And it's worked out well, and I think they're going to be a force to reckon with going forward because of the offensive mind and the attack of Sean McVay, and then having a powerful defense under Wade Phillips.
The other thing these two franchises have done is, you know, get talent. Because I remember going last year and seeing how thin it was as far as the Eagles' wide receiving core, and it was the same thing with the Rams. So what the Rams do, they go out and get Robert Woods, then they draft Cooper Kupp, and then they make the trade and they get Sammy Watkins. I mean, you look at Alshon Jeffrey now with Philadelphia. He's been a big impact. Torrey Smith has added some speed. I mean, it's one thing to be able to have a quarterback, but you also need guys to throw to.
Well, you know, it's funny you bring that up, and I said this since the beginning of the season, you know, when people were looking at the success of the Philadelphia Eagles, and I said, you know, we're looking at kind of a glass half full because I don't feel like they have they need one or two more pieces, and I believe they need that at the wide receiver position. Aguilar has been a shock. You know, from where he's been the last couple of years to where he's at now, no one expected that big jump. And then you bring Alshon Jeffries in, which I think he needs to be a little bit more of a presence in the passing game. If they can go out and get that one horse at wide receiver, Aguilar starts to develop a little bit quicker. You know, Zach Ertz has already established himself. He continues to stay healthy. All of a sudden, he becomes one of those Gronkowski and Travis Kelce kind of tight ends. And then the rough with the running game, you know, it's running back by committee. If they can get that one type of running back, more like a Brian Westbrook, LaDainian Tomlinson kind of guy, where you're not going through three or four running backs, now you're talking about a complete offense where all of a sudden we're starting to talk Carson Wentz as one of the top five quarterbacks in the league.
Mm-hmm. How long do you think that should take to happen if he gets that opportunity with the right players to be considered one of the top five? How long do you think that transition can be in this league?
Well, I want to see the consistency of it all. I know this year it's, you know, one that we can kind of just have a wow effect. I want to see for a four-year span. But if he can continue to develop, and with Tom stepping away and Aaron getting older and Drew on his way out, we're going to be talking about probably in the next three years, talking about the top five quarterback, probably with the ranks of, like, you know, Matt Ryan, and see how Andrew Luck continues to come back, Marcus Mariota. We'll be talking about guys like that in that top five, top seven spot.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. Do you have an adjustable rate mortgage that is about to increase? Or first and second mortgage that you would like to combine into one? Low mortgage payment? Hey, give Keel Mortgage a call today. They are local, friendly, and have been serving families up and down the West Coast for over 3 decades. With interest rates forecasted to rise, the best time to explore your options is now. It starts with a phone call to 1-888-778-KIEL or online at keelmortgage.com. That's Keel Mortgage, 888-778-KIEL. They can help. CL53969. Is there any comparable on Carson Wentz to quarterbacks you've seen?
I would probably say his physical ability and being able to use his legs. I'd probably say more like an Andrew Luck. I would probably say his arm would be more kind of like a Ben Roethlisberger. His size is probably in a mix of, you know, you don't see too many guys 245 pounds or so, 235. That might be also with Andrew Luck. You know, just the way that he approaches the game. I love the way he's protecting the football to separate himself from most of these quarterbacks who come out of the season with 15 to 18 interceptions a year. I think he's going to continue to separate himself that way. And that's the way that you win in Philadelphia, is by protecting the football and giving your guys a chance.
Yeah, no, I'll tell you what, I mean, but it's just so fun to watch the way he develops. On the other side, you know, Philadelphia comes into play, Seattle. How do you observe Russell Wilson and the things he's able to do?
You know, it's funny. I've had this argument with, you know, guys on First Take with Max Kellerman, and I've had this argument on radio. It's funny how ever since the second Super Bowl, people tend to not want to give Russell credit. And it's sad because he's continued to evolve each and every year into one of the best quarterbacks in the game. Yeah, he may not be 6'3", 230 pounds, off 80 yards downfield. The guy's a winner. And when he's in the offense and he's in the huddle, Seattle has a great chance of winning. Now, my thing is, like we just talked about with Jared Goff and also with Carson Wentz, that they get some pieces around him. I look at this Seattle offense, and first I start with the offensive line. You know, you have to be able to go and get some tackles that can move. You know, some big tackles that are agile, that can also run block and pass block. And then you get the center, like they have with their center who's now in New Orleans. You get an athletic center that can control the interior part of that offensive line. You won't have to see him run around and, you know, kind of always have to make plays with his legs. That will kind of go down. And then you go out and go get a horse on the outside, which they thought that's what Jimmy Graham would be, but now they kind of have asserted him just at the tight end position. They need a horse at the wide receiver position. You do that, we're talking definitely about Russell Wilson being an elite quarter, a top five quarterback in this game, which I still think he's a top seven quarterback because he's underrated to me. No one wants to give him any credit, but he's a winner. He's been to two Super Bowls. He's been in an NFC championship. He's led his team to the playoffs when everyone that they need has been healthy. And so, you know, with an aging defense, a secondary that's starting to really battle injury and fight of trying to stay on the football field, you know, I just think, you know, you need to continue to build, get some horses on defense, and then help them out on offense.
If you put on your defensive coordinator hat, what would you do if you're Seattle? You don't have Richard Sherman, you don't have Cam Chancellor, but you do have guys with experience out there like Byron Maxwell, former Eagle, and Jeremy Lane, a young corner, and Shaquille Griffin. What kind of defense do you try to put up there to stop Carson Wentz?
Well, what you do is you do what Bill Belichick would do. You know, and you don't have the full talent anymore like you used to have. So now you go back into a zone defense where you play a little cover two trail. You may trap one if they're playing against one of the top receivers. You may double team the number two guy. And then for their number one guy, you always have a guy on the deep. And so I just think for their scheme, yeah, you're missing pretty much three-fourths of your defense in the secondary, but you still have your pass rush, you still have your linebacking core. But you have to find a way to create pressure from your front seven. You can create pressure from your front seven to move Carson off of his spot, and hopefully on the back end they can at least be close to the receivers where they can possibly make a play. Then that works in your favor on the defensive end. But they're going to have to probably go back to a zone defense where they're just kind of sitting back and trying to force Carson to just continue to dump the ball down, and then they rally to the ball.
Interesting. So now staying in the NFC East, I mean, you've seen bad handling of quarterback situations all through the NFL for so many years. How bad was the way the Giants handled the Eli Manning situation?
Well, you know what? The whole thing about it is funny. I laugh when I kind of, you know, watch the reaction of people. I mean, I've been benched. I was benched in Philadelphia, and we've been to so many NFC championships. Now, okay, yeah, he's a two-time Super Bowl champion, and the MVP in the Super Bowl. But, I mean, they're playing bad. I mean, no matter how you look at it, he hasn't played well in the last three, four seasons. So, I mean, it was bound to happen. And for the whole thing for McAdoo, he's kind of behind the A-bomb because everyone's kind of pointing the finger at him anyway. He had Jerry Reese. But it was bound to happen. The way that they handled it, they at least went to him and said, hey, you know what? We want to play some of the other guys. We want you to start, but we want to play some of the other guys. At least he had the opportunity to do that. When I was busy, it was like, hey, we're going to go with the next guy. And, you know, we want you to just kind of stay ready, and we want you to be the backup. When in actuality, you're still not the backup. You're like the third guy, unless you got a chance of winning, then you go in and try to help. But it's funny how the reaction of it all, it's like all of a sudden we just looked at the world's greatest quarterback all of a sudden just get benched. It's like, we all go through it, and now it's to the point where I just think the question is, does he retire or does he continue to play?
Interesting. What about in Washington? What do you think happens with Kirk Cousins?
Well, Kirk's going to have to stay. He's going to have to stay. I mean, you thought San Francisco would be the destination for him, but Jimmy Garoppolo is there now. So I think they're going to have to pay Kirk Cousins no matter what. I mean, they haven't had any success over there under Kirk Cousins. I mean, he'll put up, you know, decent numbers, and, you know, he'll shine a little bit versus the blitz or whatever, but he hasn't won anything. Hasn't won a playoff game. You know, he hasn't won a conference championship. So those are the questions that are going to go into the mind of Dan Snyder and also Bruce Allen. Because if you look at it, Jay Gruden, to me, probably should be on the hot seat too. You know, we can talk about their quarterback getting paid, but Jay Gruden should be on the hot seat because he hasn't won anything.
And then finally, you look down in Dallas, and Dak Prescott had such a great rookie season. He was starting the season off pretty well, loses Ezekiel Elliott, and right now this thing has gone in a tank. Still believe in Dak Prescott? I do, but what are your thoughts on Dak?
Absolutely. Absolutely believe in Dak Prescott. Like, Dak is just going through his role reversal. You know, this year that you're seeing from Dak Prescott, kind of, and it's not that bad, is what we've seen from Jared Goff and also from Carson Wentz. Next year, when everyone's healthy enough and Ezekiel Elliott is out of suspension and the offensive line is back in there, you'll see the Dak Prescott you see his rookie year. I think right now all the weight's on Dak Prescott's shoulders because he doesn't have the weapons. I mean, Dez Bryant, I said it last year that I felt they should have traded Dez Bryant to try to get a young stud at wide receiver that he can develop with Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott being that kind of the three-headed monster look that we've seen over the years in Dallas with Troy Aikman, Michael Irvin, and also with Emmitt Smith. They need to start thinking about that. Offensive line is pretty much young and short. They need to get Tyron Smith back healthy and then maybe get one more piece to the right side of the offensive line. But Dak Prescott is your answer. He's your franchise quarterback. So they need to continue to build around him. But then get some defensive pieces, guys that can create some turnovers. You know, they're bend but don't break kind of a defense. I love what Rob Marinelli's been able to do, but you're gonna need to get a middle linebacker in there that's going to be there. Sean Lee has been in and out a little bit too much. He's fragile. When he's in the game, yeah, he makes plays, but you can't count on him because of his durability. So they need some help with the defense to be able to create turnovers.
Hey, Donovan, it's great catching up. You can catch him on ESPN Radio. You can catch him on ESPN TV. Donovan McNabb, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, John.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with a Professor.